Coming up on this episode of DL Weekly, a big change in the future for an opening day attraction, another celebrity sighting, new Pixar Fest merchandise,
D23 ticket drama, magic key sales and promotions. We finish our talk with Dr. Skipper and more. DL Weekly starts now.
Well, hello there. Welcome to our unbirthday party. For your safety, please be sure to stay listening with your hands, arms, feet, and ears inside the podcast. And please, do give Peg and Teresa easier trivia questions. Well, it seems DL Weekly is about to begin. Have a most wonderful time. Perhaps tea time.
Well, hello and welcome to this episode of DL Weekly for the week of April 3rd, 2024. I'm Teresa Urban.
And I'm Teg Bushman. We'd like to thank everyone who supports the show, but this week we'd like to give a special shout out to Catherine H., Sunshine B., Chris L., and Julia M., for their continued support. If you would like to help support the show to make sure we can keep bringing you the latest news and information, discussion, and interviews about Disneyland, also once a month episode live stream like we're doing right now that you can watch as we record, head on over to dlweekly.net/support.
Now let's get to the news. The Los Angeles Times reported that sometime, quote, in the next few years, unquote, that Autopia will convert from gas engines to something else. Of course, this is a good change coming in the future, and one that us Disney fans have been, like, screaming for years. Update the Autopia.
Well, the Autopia is so loud, first of all, and it smells because of all the fumes of the gas engines.
I don't know how the cast... I would get headaches. Like, yeah. If I worked over there, I think I'd get headaches from it. So I'm really, really excited for this. I think it's long, long overdue. Now, again, we have a link to the article. It is vague. It does not say it's coming anytime soon. Perhaps we'll get more concrete details or a better timeline down the road, but right now it's very vague in that it's coming. We just don't know when, and they also didn't specify what. We would assume they'd become electric, but yeah. It doesn't say that for sure.
Yeah, I assume that they'll get rid of some type of the gas engine. I think that what they would do, and this would be kind of smart, is if they are going to have electric engines, which we don't know, but if they were, they could do it like they do with the red car trolley right now, which is when the vehicles are parked at the loading spot while guests are getting off and new guests are getting on, they could have a plate basically there that is recharging the vehicle. Because one of the things is, well, how long is the battery going to last going around in circles or whatever? But you could have that, or you could even have, if you have that middle thing that prevents you from driving the back bumper, and forth or whatever, you could also have something that goes along the guide rail that provides power as well, possibly. I don't know from a safety standpoint if that would work or not, but you could have something like that. So I'm hoping that something happens with Autopia.
But what do they do now? Because you don't ever see them filling the gas tanks on the Autopia cars. I think they take them off stage and they kind of cycle through them.
Oh, yeah. So you could they definitely do something.
Some sort of cycling like they're currently doing now and have them charge off stage.
You know what producer James said to me when he heard this story tonight? He said, oh, I hope that they fix the cars where you can actually drive them down the road because...
Boom. Because it's really hard to drive them in a straight line. Yes.
Yes. Not even a straight line, just hard to keep them. They just want to like.
Control.
Yeah, they don't turn very well, let's just say.
And they don't go forward very well either.
Yeah. But imagine.
they like to drive at a diagonal.
Imagine how like futuristic the Autopia would seem because you already have things in there from Honda because you've got like the robot and everything.
Seriously though, so when they redid that, I want to say the article said that was 2016 that they kind of did the refresh.
Long already? Wow.
I think I remember that's what the article said. That would have been the perfect time to have done it because like electric cars were just like it was new and it was like new and exciting and it was futuristic. That would have been the perfect time to have updated them, but they just they didn't. It was really fun though because the Los Angeles Times did also talk with Bob Gurr and got his thoughts because of course Bob Gurr designed the original Autopia cars and he's all for it. He is very excited and thinks that this is a good, you know, a good next step for the Autopia. attraction.
Teresa brought this up, but I'm just going to read it. Was he expressed a grander vision for Tomorrowland as a hub for stories about renewable energy, public transit, and other sustainable technologies that will help us create a better tomorrow. What a great idea.
I think it's beautiful. I really do think that's beautiful. And like, what a good thing that Tomorrowland could be, because that could, that's always going to be evolving and changing, you know, like the future is always evolving and changing. So I think that would be a really cool, and you already have a lot of you've got the monorail for the transportation there. You used to have the Skyway buckets for transportation, but yeah, anyways, very, very cool.
Any change in Tomorrowland is a good change at this point. Well, guess what, Teresa? Yet another well-known Disney personality entertained guests last week. Josh Gad. Josh Gad donned a train conductor costume and treated guests to a grand circle tour on the E.P. Ripley, the locomotive that Walt Disney himself rolled in on for Disneyland's grand opening celebration. Josh's commentary was highly entertaining, as expected, from Olaf and LeFou actor.
Again, another... This one would have been totally... Totally caught me off guard if I happened to be one of the lucky guests, because Josh Gad is not tied to that attraction like Patrick is tied to the Soarin' attraction. So I just think it's so fun. So it's almost like we're going to have this fun little mini series with Josh Gad. This all started at the 2022 D23 Expo when Josh Gad became a Disney legend, and he shared that he had applied to work, I believe it was at Disneyland, and he really wanted to be a Jungle Cruise skipper. And so he kind of was laying it on thick that he was not hired to be a Jungle Cruise skipper, and later became the very famous actor that he is today. So he was kind of lamenting that he never got to do that. So Disney invited him, and he got to be a skipper at Disneyland. I don't think it was for the day, but he at least got to take one trip around the jungle as a Jungle Cruise skipper. So he's back. He's becoming another classic attraction cast member, and he got to hang out and be a train conductor for the Disneyland Railroad. I think that's so fun.
I feel like if I was somebody like Josh Gad, who obviously, before becoming famous, wanted to work at the parks, I feel like at this point, wonderful for him to have this relationship with Disney. Mm-hmm. To just be like, here's the deal. Since I'm a Disney legend now,
I think this would be fun.
I think it'd be fun if
we
just
spread some magic.
A few times a year, I just come out and I just pick different attractions and I get to do cool stuff.
I love it.
Like, how awesome. And then the train is like a perfect place because somebody's driving it, so he can just spiel just like the Jungle Cruise. I don't know. I think it's kind of cool. I like Josh Gad. I love that he loves Disney parks as much as we like Disney parks, it seems like. And these lucky people, they got to be on there.
I know. There is a link in the show notes to the YouTube video posted by Disney of Josh's Grand Circle Tour with guests.
Yeah.
Well, later this month, Pixar Fest will be coming to the resort, and there is a lot of merchandise to choose from shirts to Mickey and Minnie ears and everything in between. There's something, of course, for everyone. The merchandise is broken up into collections, which is interesting, and I think kind of a new and different for the parks. So the collections featuring the Pixar Painted Collection, a Pizza Planet Collection, a Toy Story Collection, a Wilderness Explorer Collection, and more. So usually for these, there's just kind of, I don't know, the branded merch and then some merch that kind of goes along. So I'm thinking of what they've got for Season of the Force that they've released. But this is, I find this interesting that there's different collections, and the different collections are found in different places, in different areas of the parks.
Okay, so I want to say this painted collection, I'm not usually a fan of these type of shirts, but I want this shirt.
It's fun.
So it's like a Hawaiian cut of shirt, and it's got what looks like hand paint, I don't know, painted characters from Pixar, and it's so bright and vivid. I love it. I don't know. I was scrolling through, and I'm like, this one is great.
Look at the Mike Wazowski ears from the painted collection.
Cute. Do you have any favorites from any of these collections?
I don't know. They're all so good. All so good.
I thought you'd be really excited for the Wilderness Explorer collection.
I mean, yes. There's nothing that super, super sticks out to me, but yeah, the Wilderness Explorer stuff is probably my favorite, and I always like and enjoy the classic fest merch, if that makes sense. So I do really like the design that they have for Pixar Fest overall. So the spirit jersey design, they've got a bag, there's a zipped hooded sweatshirt. I like the design because it's almost like Pixar. It's the Pixar characters, but it's almost like comic strip looking is sure. what it makes me think
like
of
the
and
style
feel
of it. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's fun. A different take on our favorite characters.
Oh, goodness. We have some personal skin in this next story. The D23 ticket experience was something else this year. All of the tickets sold out pretty quick. The communication from D23 was not the best in terms of what was for sale and what was sold out between the first day, which was the D23 Gold Member presale, the second day, which was the Visa card holder presale, and the general ticket sale days. D23 had stated that a limited number of tickets, would be sold in the first two presale days, but when general sales opened, many tickets had already sold out. Now, I'm going to let you go because I said I was frustrated with this, but you actually were in the queue. I don't know if you want to share your crazed setup that you had going?
I can share the details. So no secret, Tag and I were planning to go to the D23 Expo this year. So of course, we are D23 Gold members. We both have the Disney Visa cards and we qualified for the general sale. So we were eligible for both pre-sales plus just general sales. So we're thinking, oh, we got this. We've got 3 days worth of releases. It's been shared that there's a limited number of tickets being released for the two pre-sales. So my thought process was, okay, if we don't get what we want on day one, which spoiler alert, what we wanted was the 3-day Honda Center ticket. We were calling them the cheap seats because we didn't care. We just wanted to be in the room where it happened. So we wanted, they were like $297, I think.
Starting.
And it was the 3-day ultimate fan pass is what we were looking at. With our top day, we really, 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 really wanted to be in the Honda Center on Saturday night because that is when the parks specific announcements were going to be made.
The experiences panel.
Yes, the
is experiences what they're
calling it this year. But we were excited to do all three, but if we had to pick one, that was like number one for us. So I get in for the gold member sale days, and I had a couple of queues running because I wasn't sure how this was working, if it was login, like D23 member login specific or computer specific or how it was working. And well, spoiler alert, I was in on my phone and on my computer, and the lower of the two numbers that I was assigned was 22,000 and some odd something. So my number never got called to go into, and that was on the work when I was on my computer at work. So I left work well before that number was called. So of course my phone had the higher number of the two. They sales closed before my 29,000th place in line.
As you would expect.
Would have gotten up, which was fine. Cause I thought day one, we've got this, no problem. So I went in a little bit more prepared on day two and I thought we were golden. Cause I thought I was like one of the luckiest people in the queue because I was assigned spot. It was like 3,800 and some.
Yeah.
So I was like, ooh, we got this. I'm towards the front. Isn't that crazy? 3,800 and some is towards the front of the line. But it was way better than 29,000 and some that I was the day before. So no joke, 5 minutes before I get in, it's announced that the D23 Ultimate Fan Passes were all sold out. So I told Tag, I'm just going to wait. I'm going to look because maybe I can get the single day passes to get into the Honda Center. And we can create our own 3-day ticket, if you will. Or we can do a mix and match and grab some of the days.
Because there wasn't a huge discount to buy it as a bundle as opposed to three individual
days. So we were thinking, okay, maybe we'll just create our own 3-day ticket and have 3 single day tickets. Or we'll do, you know, maybe 2 Honda Center days and 1 Expo only days. We'll figure it out. We had like plan A through, I don't know, A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, probably.
We had a lot
probably
of plans.
Probably all the way down to H.
A lot of plans.
We had plans. We went in there Saturday again. That was the number one day. Was already sold out. So I said to Tag, I said, you know what? I'm going to call it. More tickets are being released tomorrow. We got this. Third time's the charm, right? So we thought. So the panic started coming in that evening when we noticed the D23 website was changing and flipping things over, saying on the main normal website that things were sold out. And I was trying to remain positive because, you know, that's me. And I was like, well, maybe they did this yesterday and we didn't notice. I don't know. It still says, the phrasing says that they were releasing only a limited number. So
limited,
I think,
quantities limited, each time.
Limited quantities. So I'm like, there's no way that this is almost, because at that point, at the end of the pre-sale, the only thing that was still available was the Expo only for Friday, Expo only for Sunday, and then the, like,
$900.
The 3-day preferred D23 Gold member exclusive, those were the very expensive floor seats.
Started at, like, $999.
Yeah, started at, like, $1,000 for those expensive, so way out of our budget. So I told Tay, so we were kind of then having to figure out our backup plan, and it was looking pretty much like, okay, maybe we're not going to D23 this year because there's only a Friday and Sunday Expo only. So are they going to be sold out of those by the time we get called? The Disney well, gods were smiling down.
What
upon
number did you get on day three?
Day three, I got number 250. I took a screenshot because I didn't think that those low numbers even existed. I did not think they existed. And spoiler alert, I don't know how. Disney magic. That's my only explanation. Disney magic. Tag and I, for a very long time, didn't think it was real. I got in. Well, first of all, I got number 250, which,
crazy.
Wow, crazy. And then second of all, when I got in, I went to the Expo only tickets, which were called the D23 fan passes. And when I opened it, it said the 3-day ticket was available, which had been marked as sold out the night before. So I just quickly got in, threw them in my cart and checked out, got my confirmation email, everything. And Tag's like, I don't know, I think it was a glitch. We're going to get an email saying that there was a mistake and they're going to refund the money. And I'm like, I don't know, I got the email. It was a roller coaster ride. It was an emotional whirlwind for some, me mainly. But I haven't gotten an email saying that there was a mistake. So by some Disney magic. That's all I got to say. Disney magic.
I found your screenshot.
There's my screenshot.
Your line number 250.
I got in and checked out at, like, 10 minutes after the line had opened. It was wild. A wild, wild ride. So there is still time because they have to mail us the physical passes. Perhaps it won't. But I think we got it. I think there was some something. They found some in the back room and dusted them off for us. I don't know. But it was pretty crazy. So we understand. It was confusing. A lot of people were, I felt bad. I was seeing people online that were kind of panic buying stuff. I saw people that were saying, well, I wasn't planning on it, but the only way I could get to the Honda Center was if I bought the $1,000 tickets or the $800 tickets. And so they were
crazy people.
They were purchasing tickets that were outside of what they had been planning on spending. And yeah, so I was really excited for this format because I thought it would open up flexibility. But I think what may have happened was it made people
panic
a little bit more about it. So, but you, on the flip side, you were feeling, you kind of felt discouraged because you're like, oh, well, the thing I was looking forward to the most was the parks panel.
Yep. I'm always looking forward to the parks panel.
Yeah. And now we know, and now at this point we know going in that that's not in the cards for us. Whereas previous years, you got your ticket and then there was still a chance because it was, you know, kind of a lottery. So we've determined, and quite honestly, we were very, very lucky. We somehow were able to do and be included in the parks panel both of the D23 events that we have attended. So
previously,
2019
yep.
and 2022, we somehow lucked out and got into those panels, into that room. So the odds just were not in our favor because it worked out for us well the last two times. So we're just really excited to go to Expo.
But I also look at it this way. We can leave the Expo a little early. We can get some food at Blaze or wherever we mm-hmm. want. Go back to our hotel, and we could stream the things for free.
We're not sure if they're streaming. I don't know if
they did last time.
Yeah, they haven't announced if they're streaming or not. But at the very least, we can keep up with updates that people are posting on social media and whatnot. So we won't be able to be in the room where it happens unless there's some other crazy Disney magic and they go, oh, wait, we found more Expo Center tickets.
This
or
just
Expo
is
Honda Center
showing
tickets.
To me. But, yeah. I don't know where they would find it because I don't think there's a venue in the Anaheim area that's big enough. Mm-mm. But they need to have, like, a bigger stadium to host this. I don't know how many or how.
The demand for this event is just
ridiculous.
Wild. It's just wild. So we have an idea that there's like, I think it's what, 18,000 tickets I've seen for what, or 18,000 seats is what has been reported that the Honda Center is holding. That's not saying how many people fit in the Expo Center. It's pretty wild when you think about how many people attend D23.
The message I got from somebody who works at Disney said that the end stage max cap was 13,793.
Wild. Wild, wild, wild. It's crazy. We have determined that there's always bumps. There's always hiccups when it comes to these ticket releases. We've done it three times.
You're right.
Now,
we've gotten lucky.
Two times previous. And there were bigger bumps and bigger hiccups to ticket sales than what we experienced this time. There was an hour delay to the start of the D23 Gold member ticket sales. But there was, I don't remember if it was 19 or 22. One of those years they had to actually delay it like by a couple of days, if not weeks, because the queue system was that goofy that they had to kind of reset everything. So it's getting better.
Do you think that
there's still a lot?
Like, I don't know, because I'm not crazy to go into these things, but like, Taylor Swift tickets.
Someone
do
joked,
these things happen?
Yes. Joked in our Discord chat, because we had an emotional support group in our Discord chat for everyone that was
trying to get tickets.
And they joked like, it must be like the Taylor Swift's people. Like, it must be the same thing, because this is what it was like to get. Yeah, Taylor. So it was the same kind of craziness.
Okay.
The thing that frustrates me, I wouldn't be as annoyed, stressed,
disappointed.
Whatever you want to say, if it was going to if people that were purchasing these tickets were Disney fans that were going to be using them for themselves, their friends, their family. But what makes me sad is that a lot of this could have been resellers, because there has been tickets that have already shown up on third party sites to resell them. So that always just makes me sad, is when it's people that are just trying to make a buck buying these up from people that are fans like us that just want to go and do the experience. So, however, there is something different this year. Disney D23 has the exact seat assignments to tickets. So it probably is easier to maybe track some of the reselling to hopefully maybe nip that. But I don't know. I don't know. So we'll see.
How does StubHub have so many tickets remaining for this event?
Yeah, they're reselling, but yeah. Anyways, so the good, the bad, the ugly. We got our tickets. Disney magic that we got our tickets.
Teresa, D23, Honda, and Anaheim, and shopping Saturday only. Look 36 tickets remaining.
But look at what those prices are, Teg.
4 days ago, $375. That's not terrible. I mean, for one day, yeah, it's probably pretty terrible. But this one's pretty close. $210 for $518. No, we're not going to do this.
No, we're not buying from the resellers. We are just going to enjoy our expo only weekend. I'm just thinking of all the time that we're going to have for all the activities, all of the other panels that we can go visit, because now we don't, you know, there's pros. We were talking about this because we're thinking positively, right? We are thinking positively. We're like, you know what? We're going to go to bed at a decent time.
Well, think
night.
About this. We're going to be, we can lay down in our bed at the Hojo. Mm-hmm. We can put, I can put the laptop stream of the thing, if they're going to stream it, onto the TV, and we can sit comfortably in our own bed.
We could have snacks.
We could be snacking. We could just be chilling.
We are making lemonade out of our lemons, and we're going to have a great time regardless. But that was our experience and thoughts. But yeah, we'll be at D23 Expo all 3 days unless it shakes out and they say, oh, sorry, Teresa, that ticket that you thought you bought wasn't actually a ticket. Yeah. I'm thinking, this is my thought. I have negative insider information. The only way negative this makes any sense to me is the system must mark off that tickets are sold out once it gets to under a certain quantity. So maybe that quantity will say was there were 200 tickets left. And the fact that I was number 250 in line, I just dumb lucked into getting some of the last few of those 3-day tickets for the expo. I don't know. That's what I'm going with. Since the latest rounds of Magic Keys have gone on sale, they haven't sold out, unlike the D23 Expo tickets. Disneyland appears to be promoting the program in the park with signs to upgrade your park ticket to be a Magic Key. I laughed so hard. David from Fresh Baked had a photo of the sign. He said, here's your literal sign that Magic Key sales are like here to stay, or I can't remember, but it was just so funny because, you know, like, well, there's the sign. Oh, here's the physical actual sign. I mean, they went that we have an actual sign saying, you know, promoting this. So I feel like maybe the key craze.
What do you think happened?
I don't know. I don't know if it has anything to do with the lawsuit finally being settled, if people got priced out, or if people just weren't finding value in re-upping, so a lot of people let theirs expire. I think, or maybe it was a combination of all.
You know
of
what
the
I
above.
Was thinking? So when they have these artificial limitations, it creates demand.
It's true.
So maybe they were like, people are frustrated. Why don't we just open up sales, let sales be what they're going to be, and just keep them open. And then demand will go down a little bit, which maybe isn't good for Disney. But then people that want a pass can get a pass.
Well, and then the whole thing just levels out.
Yeah.
Because, yeah.
So I think that would happen.
That could be.
To an extent with like park reservations. I don't know. I feel like, and I don't know how to read into this, but I feel like one of the things that seems to be changing now is a lot of things that used to be difficult, not like D23, but a lot of things, mobile order, all this stuff used to be really hard, like to find times. And I feel like that's kind of leveled out now. So yeah. I don't know if the people are just used to it now or there's like less demand. I don't know. There's lots of different options, but I find it interesting that for years, basically since the Magic Key program started, they've never just been on sale.
Right.
They've been on sale. They've sold out. That's that. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now they're just there. So I don't know if this is a situation where they just lifted the cap or if they didn't and demand is down. I mean, nobody but Disney knows.
Right. Yep.
But I'd be interested to kind of understand why is now different than it was before.
This gives me hope, though, because with our travel schedule for when we're going to be able to make trips out in the next few months to a year, there's probably going to be a gap in what our last trip in 2024 will be versus when our first trip in 2025 might be. So we were talking about this earlier because it was kind of like, well, do we re-up our pass when it expires? Because in essence, we're going to be paying. We knew that we'd have the pass for a few months with no trips planned.
Yeah.
And we kind of quote unquote waste those, we're wasting that time or wasting those months. Or do we just let the key expire, hope that they're on sale again when we are going to be going again so that we can upgrade our tickets, purchase the pass or whatever? Or do we just look at, you know, because really we were getting priced out with what the cost of day tickets versus what the pass was. We were getting pretty close to it's not making sense to have the key, and it'd make more sense and we'd have more flexibility with tickets. So we were kind of trying to reevaluate our situation with it. But this gives me hope because now we don't have to be stressed about it, because now it's not, well, if we let it lapse, we'll never get a pass again because they're never on sale. Well, now you don't have that. Like you said, takes the stress out of it, takes the panic out of it.
But also, I did not realize until, I don't know why I was looking this up last week, but I was looking up 5-day park hoppers, and we have surpassed the $500 mark for them, even when you can find them discounted.
Yeah.
Because I think it's like $515. So I was like, ooh.
Oof.
We haven't looked at ticket prices for a while, and it's, I don't know.
This was also us reflecting on 2023 when we had shorter trips.
But also, think about this. To be fair, and when we put it in perspective, it's still a great deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because 5 days, let's just round down a little bit, $500. That's $100 a day-ish, right? Well, then, what are you getting for that? Like, if you go to a Broadway show, you can spend $150, $175 for like 3 hours. You're getting way more than that. You're getting parades, fireworks, attractions, when they have Broadway show kind of things going. You have all of that. So it's still a great deal, but I think that people don't think about it that way. And I don't want it to be more expensive. Let me just be clear.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that, like, if you objectively look at it, you're getting a great deal still for and the amount of stuff you could
do. Make sure you're taking advantage and experiencing all those different things, too. Because a lot of people, I think, just get really focused on attractions and forget about all the shows and the... Or the parade, you know, they're really focused on the parade.
Dapper Dan's, the band.
There's so much going on. Yeah. So much.
Well, Magic Key holders, speaking of which, have an opportunity to get some new Star Wars merchandise before the general public. The Will Gay collection will offer pre-sales starting April 3rd at the Star Wars Trading Post in Downtown Disney. Limited quantities will be held for pre-sales, hopefully not like D23. The collection includes an Ewok hoodie, a bucket hat, and a Darth Vader sling bag.
I am loving the Ewok hoodie because it's this cute little animated Ewok riding, what is that, a speeder bike?
Yep.
But there's this little wee, like that written out behind it. I think it's adorable. Plus, Ewoks are just super, super cute. What do you think of the sling bag? I thought of you when I saw this because you were so excited about your Indiana Jones fanny pack, and now we've got a Star Wars sling bag.
Nope.
Is it because of the print or is it the sling bag itself?
Both. Well, both.
Here I thought.
The Ewok hoodie is definitely the winner of the three things for me. Because what is this called? A bucket hat. A bucket hat. I'm not a fan of bucket hats in general. It's cute, but I'm not a bucket hat fan. But this hoodie is very cute. Very cute. So if you're a Magic Key holder.
Starting the day this episode drops. You get your butt on over to the Star Wars Trading Post in Downtown Disney.
Yeah, so is the Ewok hoodie the thing for you too?
That's the thing for me, 100%. 100%. If I was going to be there and I had to pick something from the presale, that is what I'm picking.
There you go.
Well, we have an update on the new Disney community being built in the Coachella Valley in California. Cotino, A Story Living by Disney Community, posted an update to the Disney Parks blog showing the entrance to the community, the beginning of Long Table Park, one of the parks in the community, and progress on the model homes. This had fallen off my radar. I kind of had forgotten. Disney hadn't really been
every update I had seen. It was still a pile of dirt.
Yeah, they were just now there's movement. There's things happening. There's palm trees being planted and cement being poured
and a model home being erected.
Yep, being built. So it's coming along.
Yeah, it should be interesting. Although I do find this Disney Parks blog post really funny because they end their post about it and then they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 paragraphs of like
the legalese.
Which plans are subject to change or cancellation part or whole anytime without notice. Communities for people of all ages, blah, blah, blah. But at least one person 55 years older have to live there. Residential communities, Disney branded and managed, blah, 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 blah.
Anyways,
it's like, woo.
It's exciting to see this coming together. And the other thing that's exciting too is I feel like you're starting to get more of a sense of this community because we're seeing piles of dirt from outside of like
there's a fenced building already. Area.
Yeah, there's a building already. There's landscaping done. But the thing that's breathtaking to me about this is the not just like this shot that I'm looking at from the Disney Parks blog. Yeah, we've got the newly planted palm trees sitting there. But I'm looking at look at the mountain range the views of this area is gorgeous.
It
absolutely
is nice.
Gorgeous. So once it's more than just, a construction zone, it's going to be even more. I can't wait to see this come together. Now, if only, I think we looked at the pricing because you and I are just curious people, and I think the pricing was a bit...
Too much.
A bit much.
And you have to be over 55.
For Long Table Park residents, you need to be over 55. So there's a section of Cotino that will be 55 and above, not the whole community, just a section of the community.
With select home sites intended for 55.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. There's a section of the community that's for 55 and above. But anyways, it looks gorgeous. I would definitely live out there if I could.
I like where we live, but that's just me.
Be right next to the parks. And
you're not right
Disney,
next to the parks, but
I mean,
you're closer
compared
than we
to
are.
What we are now. you're near the parks. You're in a Disney, Disney community. So I feel like maybe I'm wrong. I like to think a lot of other Disney park Disney fans would also be living there. Maybe not. I could be totally wrong on that. But that's my
I'm sure
my
there'll envision, be people.
My envisioning of it.
All right. Well, even though Tiana's Palace has been open for months now, new additions can still pop up. Well, Louis the Alligator has a new statuette near the entrance of the location. It is nice to see Disney adding things like this to basically a completed venue that they continue to add this stuff. I think he looks great.
It's adorable. So this little statue looks like and is the same feeling as the little statues that are around the partner statue.
In the hub. Yep.
In the hub. So part of me almost wonders, like, was Louis going to live in the hub and maybe be a new resident of the characters that are currently represented in the hub around the partner statue? Or is this something that they're going to tie in specifically to Tiana's Palace and maybe a couple other characters from the Bayou and from the film will also appear in like a bronze statue form there? Because it seems interesting to me that it's just the one.
Sure.
You know, because maybe Rey will come.
Oh, Rey.
Maybe Mama Odie.
I just, every time I think of Rey, I think of Evangeline.
Yeah, Rey and Evangeline. Maybe the frog forms of Princess Tiana and Prince Naveen will make an appearance too. There's options. So I'm curious if this is it or if this is signs of more to come.
Sure. I like it.
I'm very excited about this next story. The Season of the Force starts this week, and there are some new activities to take part in. A new seek and find adventure will begin at the Star Trader, where guests will search for hidden cylinders that will reveal a code to receive a keepsake.
You love
them.
All of these scavenger hunts.
I love these little scavenger hunt things around the park. They're so fun. That's all the details Disney has released, is that
one sentence.
Yeah, that one little sentence there. But I think it's fun. Like, what a cool, fun way to have, like, bring something different into a celebration that's not just themed food, that's not just themed merch, which clearly we love both of those things. And it's not just an attraction with a overlay of Hyperspace Mountain. You know, I think that's like a fun activity that's, I would assume, fairly simple for Disney to kind of put together, but it's really, I'm sure I'm not the only person that these little scavenger hunts bring so much joy to.
Yeah. Well, and this could be cool because you're like, this reminds me of those like Play Disney apps. Like, we like to play the one in the Peter Pan queue. Mm-hmm. James always whips out the app there and goes through it because you got to find all the different things. And then you unlock Tinkerbell. Yeah. So it's kind of like that. I don't know why Disney doesn't do more stuff like this. And I wish Disney would do more stuff like this that is tied to the Magic Band, because I feel like that's going to be a whole thing.
Maybe it's coming. Maybe it's coming. One thing I really wanted to quick note. Before we get into the next section, I had another bit of news that had just popped up at the end. So I believe it was last week we had reported that the Wonderground Gallery was suddenly closed. Well, I don't even know what this means, but we're reporting on it. The Disney Dress Shop, which had been located more towards the center of downtown Disney near the entrance to the Grand Californian, has moved... and is in the space where Wonderground once was. There is a new sign above it that says Disney Dress Shop. It does not look temporary. They have redone the inside. Wonderground Gallery items are currently for sale in the Disney Home Store. But yeah, Wonderground Gallery is no longer in its current spot. No word on if that means Wonderground is moving to where the dress shop was, if Wonderground's moving somewhere differently entirely, or what's going on with Wonderground.
I hope they don't get rid of Wonderground.
Wondering minds need to know what is going on with the Wonderground Gallery. That is one of the best, if not the best, store in downtown Disney. I'm a little worried for the future of Wonderground. I'm curious.
I don't think it's going anywhere. Curious. I don't think it's going
away permanently.
You're just wondering where it's going.
But
to
I'm wondering what's happening.
Be located.
What is going on? Yep. Where is
what is happening?
What is happening?
Well, our first promo spot this week, we're actually going to talk about a podcast related thing.
Woo-hoo!
On we're going to be in the parks.
Both are podcast-related things. Yeah.
Well, on our trip that we're coming up, on Sunday, April 21st, we're going to have our meetup. Mm-hmm. And the meetup is going to be at 1 p.m. Disneyland time at the grassy area in downtown Disney. So this is the new grass area by the stage, by where they're going to have the new Parkside Market.
The side of downtown Disney that is closest to the Disneyland Hotel entrance.
Yeah.
From a Star Trader.
Do you think by the time we get there that Earl of Sandwich is going to be in the new temporary location
there? I think it is. I saw updates that the new temporary location, a.k.a. the kind of like trailer thing that they're going to be operating out of, has been wrapped with Earl of Sandwich logoing now. So it's looking more like an Earl of Sandwich temporary location. So I do believe it will be.
Yeah. Sunday, April 21st, 1 p.m. Disneyland time. If you listen to the podcast and you're going to be around that day, please show up, say hi. We're going to plan to hang around there for an hour or so, maybe 2 hours, depending on how things are going that day for us. We're going to eat some Earl of Sandwich. We're going to hang out with everybody. We'll have buttons and stuff that we can give out to people we meet.
Yeah.
It'll be great to see you. And we'd love to do a big group photo. We like to do those big group photos when everybody shows up. So if you're around, let's do it.
Be sure you're following us, if you aren't already, on our social media pages. Facebook and Instagram are the ones that we keep the most up to date on. We will for sure be posting that day to kind of keep everyone in the know of when we're there, where the exact spot is, so you can kind of look and see like a photo. Typically, we like to go to the far back left corner because there's a shaded spot with tables and chairs, but that might be a popular spot. So we'll be in that area somewhere, just depending on where.
Look for Teresa's ears.
Look for the ears. Yes, look for the ears. But check social media to be sure where we're at to get a more specific location as well.
I am Groot.
What do you mean you're hungry? Kraglin needs those pots for the rehydrator. We don't have time for snacks.
I am Groot.
Now, were you talking to Tag and Teresa again? How'd they even get a hold of you?
I am Groot.
Fine. One snack. That's it.
I am Groot.
No, I haven't seen any churros. You gotta talk to Vern. And stop smiling.
Well, this week in Snack Chat, we are traveling.
No foodie guide.
Venturing into the jungle. And we're heading over to Adventureland. We have finished up the left side of Main Street. So we're taking a left, going to Adventureland. And of course, the first thing we pop up upon is the Tiki Juice Bar. The Tiki Juice Bar is the original location where one could get Dole Whip in the parks. We do know that there is now a second place, which we are also talking about this week, Tropical Hideaway. But Tiki Juice Bar is Dole Whip, Dole Whip, more Dole Whip. Oh, like, and some pineapple juice.
Oh, pineapple juice and Dole Whip. It's sponsored by Dole.
Yeah, it is a quick, and it's just grab and go now. So it's mobile order only. There is not a standby.
You cannot interesting.
Order at the counter at the Tiki Juice Bar anymore. Mobile order only. So yeah, make sure you stop at the Tiki Juice Bar to get a famous Dole Whip soft serve or a Dole Whip float. Now, if the original pineapple isn't your thing, you just keep on walking to the Tropical Hideaway, which is just down around the corner, opposite of the Tiki Juice Bar. Tropical Hideaway does not offer mobile order. It is standby line only. And at the Tropical Hideaway,
some great food, by the way.
Wonderful food, which we'll talk about. But for desserts, of course, yes, they have the original pineapple Dole Whip, but they also have fun flavors. Currently, they've got strawberry and mango Dole Whip as well. So you can get a strawberry Dole Whip, a mango Dole Whip, a pineapple Dole Whip, or you can swirl two of those three flavors together and make your own deliciousness. My current favorite has been, we've been doing strawberry pineapple the last couple of trips. I think this trip I want to try the mango.
Well, they also have savory snacks if a frozen treat isn't your thing. And I have found that the bao buns that they have there are really good. They have a char sui bao, which is a sweet sticky roasted pork in a sweet barbecue sauce dusted with paprika. I think that's the one I had that was really good. They also have a spiced vegetable bao, which is very good. All of the vegetarian options basically everywhere in the park have been really good. Mm-hmm. You can get a trio of the baos because the other bao that they offer is a lime chicken bao, which I think is newer because I don't remember the lime chicken one being there last time we were there. And then you can also get some chamoy watermelon rings, which are watermelon flavored gummies with chili lime seasoning and chamoy. So lots of cool stuff there. Of course, there's some grab and go stuff like potato chips and whatnot. And of course, you can get your pineapple juice or your Dole Whip there, like Teresa said, and a selection of sodas.
The other fun thing, too, is at the Tropical Hideaway, they do have a chili mango whip. It's a pineapple mango swirl Dole Whip with chamoy, mango, and lime, chili lime seasoning. And they have also had some seasonal, like, Dole Whip concoctions and treats and floats and sundaes. That's the place that we got the, it was a Dole Whip sundae that came in the jungle. This was, oh goodness, this was 2021, I think, that we got this, that came in the collectible Jungle Cruise boat. It wasn't like a sipper. It wasn't a sipper. Wasn't a popcorn bucket. It it's downstairs.
Oh, I thought it was right here.
It's on display in my living room is where it's at. I was just double checking because I just realized that on the Disneyland.disney.go menu, they did not mention. We're going to have to check this out. They only mentioned the bow being available at the Tropical Hideaway. They also had lumpia there, which was delicious. Somebody let us know. Is the lumpia still available? I'm a little concerned that it's not on the menu and that perhaps maybe that has been removed from the menu permanently. But oh my goodness, the lumpia were, oh, they were so good. There was a sweet and a savory pork lumpia, and there was a sweet fruit lumpia. I never got to try the sweet fruit one.
Also to note, Tropical Hideaway does not offer any type of mobile order.
No mobile order. If you want a mobile order, you got to go over to the Tiki Juice Bar. The Tiki Juice Bar is just super fun because it's kind of like in the Tiki Room. I don't know what you want to call that.
Waiting
like
area.
The little waiting area, the little lawn, little garden area. It's very fun.
I was laughing because I was a guest on the Supreme Resort and we were talking about the Tiki Room for a minute. I don't remember how this came up, but we were talking about Dole Whips and Tiki Rooms. And they were like, oh, you mean, because we were talking about, I think we were talking about the animatronics in the waiting area. And they were like, oh, you mean the Dole Whip eating spot, because so many people now get their Dole Whip and just sit there.
Yeah, hang out there because they're seating. Yep.
So, but I think that one of the best food additions to Disneyland in the last 20 years has been the Tropical Hideaway, this area was mostly unused for years because they had the Aladdin's Oasis there, which they did some stuff with, but it wasn't frequent. There was like a bathroom back there you could go use. But it's nice to have this area, and I thought the Imagineers did a great job with the decorations.
My gosh.
Of course, Rosita is out there. There's the perches theming, for all the different
the
birds.
The theming of this area, if you aren't stopping to get a snack or a Dole Whip, you need to stop at the Tropical Hideaway just to look at all of the different details and things. There's different the different bird houses, the different perches. Rosita, there's an animatronic Rosita who you have heard a reference for years and years and years. They're wondering where she went in the Tiki Room performance. So I just think it's so fun. So, so fun. Again, tons and tons of details, all sorts of levels and layering, like to the point that every time we're back there, which we go back there, I want to say once a trip at least, there's still new things that I'm noticing.
There's a lot of details. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of details.
Amazing.
All right. Well, the other promo we have for ourselves this week is our public stream. Now, things are going to be a little different. If you usually every month we have a public stream that we put out on YouTube that we do on the third Sunday of every month. And this time we are going to be in Disneyland when the public stream happens. And we decided that we are going to go over to Disney California Adventure that day, and we're going to get some of the food items from the food booths, and we're going to stream and talk about our live review of some of the food that we're going to grab there. So that'll be a little more interesting and fun, hopefully, for everybody. But for those of you that are supporters at the cast member level or above that we do the hangouts with, that's going to be a week later at our normal time. It's just we find it difficult trying to do a back and forth and hear everybody and all of that stuff through Zoom.
Yeah. I was going to say, we've the last couple of times we've attempted it, we've been having technical difficulties that one of our microphones isn't working or something. It's just, it doesn't
seem to. We can't
hear
people or they can't hear us.
It doesn't seem to work smoothly. So we gotta figure out our system before we attempt it again. So we just figured not to do it,
make it a better experience for everybody. But the public stream is going to be on our YouTube channel, youtube.com/DLWeekly. It'll be at 6 p.m. Disneyland time because we're going to go over there and get some of those food booth items and try them. And we get to hear our immediate reactions to some of these things.
Yeah.
I'm really excited, actually, for this one.
I think it'll be fun.
All the food that we're going to potentially
And again,
have.
Public live stream, everyone is welcome. Same thing with our meetup. It's a public meetup. All are welcome.
Yeah, absolutely.
DL Weekly announces the boarding of the Trivia Express, nonstop star speeder service to the moon of Endor. All passengers, please prepare for immediate boarding.
Welcome to Trivia Land. How are we feeling tonight? You got excellent knowledge up in your brains? You ready for some real humdingers?
I mean, we will find out. I think last week in Trivia Land was a bust.
That's what James told me.
Yeah, so I mean, it's only up from there, right?
Yeah.
You know, Vern and James, I've got to say that if you guys continue to make it so difficult on us, we're not going to want to go to Trivia Land anymore.
No, they're just going to get really annoyed next time they come to the parks with us because we're just going to be, we won't move because we're going to sit there and scan and absorb all the details of every inch of every land. Or and attraction, apparently.
I think
you'll keep taking my phone from me every time you see me taking notes on something.
I think what we need to do is we need to have a reverse Trivia Land, like for like
again?
A discussion topic where we ask them questions,
but we don't have to be so nice anymore. Oh, I see what you're saying.
Okay.
I see what you're saying.
Well, I'm actually concerned about tonight.
Oh, great.
Because, well, as I was coming up with these questions, I was thinking, these are hard for me. But this is going to be one of those nights where they're just going to know everything. So
maybe.
You've jinxed us now. That kind of weird faith you've placed in us there.
Well, because you do this to me all the time where I'm thinking, wow, these are so hard. But anyway, let's find out how you do. So this past weekend, as you may recall, was Easter. So I want to know what you know about Easter at Disneyland.
Not much.
Well, they have the egg extravaganza.
Well, enough of that. Your first regular round question.
That wasn't the question.
What is it?
I just going to list things.
Regular round question from my curiosity about your knowledge of Disneyland and Easter. To celebrate Easter, there used to be an old-fashioned Easter parade. That's capital letters on each of those. Old-fashioned Easter parade. That was the title of it. Which ran on Main Street around the holiday until 1982. What year was the first old-fashioned Easter parade?
Well, it wasn't 1982.
Well, no, that was the...
Maybe it was really terrible, and it was 1981 to 1982. No,
it 82 was the first and last year. Started and ended.
Oh, there you go. I'm going to say 1963. It's probably the 50s, but I'm going to say 63.
I'm going to say, let me think, 1958.
Ooh.
1958 and 1963. Final answers.
It's as good as we're getting.
That's as good as we're going to get.
All right. Your second regular round question. From 1962 to 1967, guests could also enjoy a display of La Coquette, the hot air balloon. What is special about this balloon?
How is this? Is this not related to Easter?
It was displayed during the Easter time festivities.
Is it egg shaped?
I was gonna say, is it egg shaped?
Is that your answer?
Yeah, that's as good as it's getting.
or it's like painted like a Easter egg. I didn't paint Easter eggs this year.
We didn't either.
All right. So egg shaped. Final answers.
Yeah.
All right. Called a hippity hoppity good time, guests can participate in the current Easter celebration at Disneyland and Disney California Adventure.
Got it.
What's it called?
The egg extravaganza.
Extravaganza. Is that your final answer?
Yes. Yep.
All right.
Good job, Teresa. You were three answers ahead.
I was very ahead of myself.
Teresa was ahead of her time.
Ed, your fourth and final regular round question. What are the potential prizes for participating in the current Easter celebration at Disneyland and Disney California Adventure?
They're the charms, like the little keychain charm things.
Charms? If they're little like medals? They're not pins, but they're these little metal things.
They used to be the nice little plastic egg characters, but this year they're these like...
I'm going to call them like a metal charm. I guess charm. I don't know. Then there's like a ribbon on it.
Yeah. Yeah, charm.
All right.
By the way, Vern, I'd just like to say for our listeners who can't see you at home, but our live stream people can, Vern is very decked out tonight. Mm-hmm. He has got his Pride Mickey ears. He's got his Oh Boy Mickey Mouse shirt and his Stitch
pajama pants.
I don't think I've seen Disneyed out.
He's not matching, but he's head to toe Disney.
No, not toe. I'm not wearing my Mickey socks.
Oh, okay. Head to ankle Disney.
I totally forgot to put on my Mickey socks.
But nobody sees your feet anyway, so.
I don't know. Can the people in the live stream
see? Hey, you want to know what's real fun? What? So Vern's Oh Boy shirt we bought last year at the Disney outlet when we visited for the mouse meet in Seattle area. And then his ears, we just bought those at the Character Warehouse when we were there in Florida.
So the outlet and the Character Warehouse.
Yeah. Two things we don't often get to visit.
I've had this one for over a year.
Yeah, we got that one in Seattle. No, we didn't. Seattle. We got Oswald.
I got Oswald
Seattle.
In Seattle. Yeah.
I lied. Yeah. Wrong black and white button-up shirt.
Well, Vern, you're getting a lot of hearts in the chat. So.
Oh, thank you.
Well, it was a lie. It is not a coast-to-coast outfit. I'm a liar. Maybe Oh Boy must have come from Shop Disney then.
Anyway, I apologize for going off on the...
No, I'm pretty sure Oh Boy is actually from Downtown Disney.
I feel like that might be right when we went.
Could be.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure Oh Boy is Downtown Disney.
Gotcha. Bonus question.
And your bonus question tonight. While researching tonight's questions, I came across an article on CBS19news.com. Extravaganza, Easter Treats, and Springtime Characters. The article states, and I quote, Easter Day falls on April 12, 2020 this year, and if you're visiting Disneyland during Easter, or even the week surrounding it, you can enjoy plenty of Easter-themed fun at the parks.
This makes me sad. Did you say 2020?
What's wrong with this article?
It never happened because the parks were closed.
Oh.
Is that your final answer?
Yeah.
That's our final answer.
And the parks were closed. Why?
The parks were closed.
COVID-19
because
pandemic.
Of the pandemic.
Just wanted to confirm for purposes of clarification.
That is so sad. And Disneyland was closed. Do you remember the dark times of Disneyland being closed and we never knew when it was going to reopen?
Yeah,
and for
that was tough.
Over a year, we had no idea.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
Well, listeners, how did you do listening at home? How do you think Tag and Teresa did? Stick around until after the discussion topic and we can all find out together.
So let's kind of transition. So you spent time in the jungle and now you're spending time writing about the jungle. So what was that transition for you? How did the story start?
My PhD is in modern American history. And my first book was about a guy who was involved in religion and politics. And I didn't like him or the topic. And I got offers to write other books in a similar vein. And I'm like, nope, kind of burnt out on that. Thank you very much. And I ended up teaching a summer school class on the history of Disneyland.
Oh.
Just like I realized, and I remember meeting Dave Smith, the archivist.
Yeah.
And, hey, have you ever heard of a class? And he goes, there is nothing like this. There's Disney studies and people that study Disney movies or whatnot, but nothing is that I know of that's ever been specifically on a Disney park.
Wow.
So the fun thing was I got to create it from scratch, which was nice. And so I taught that for a few years and realized I could write books on this. And my first Skipper Stories book, I think it's the one you have a copy of. That one has a lot of my stories in it because my daughters always wanted to hear me tell these stories. I thought I should write these down. And then I just started interviewing my friends because every skipper I've ever met has some fun story to tell.
Oh yeah.
And there were some skippers that were like worried about being in the first book. And I remember thinking, okay, if this book is successful, they will all want to be in the second one. And every single one that was nervous, they're all in the second book.
That's awesome.
That made me excited. Yeah. So I realized, oh, I could do this. And I was involved for years with this Disney history group, like outside scholars that work with the Disney company doing history. And it's just literally taken over my life with all of these books and the class that I would teach. And I put a version of it on the website, Udemy or Udemy. It's like the first half of my History of Disneyland class is on there. You can take it online with no exams. And History of Disneyland during Walt's life is what I call that class. Yeah. So, and so instead of writing about politics and things like that to get people mad, I'm writing about Disney and just having a blast. And I get to interview people. I get to travel and interview the most interesting people and get great stories. And my wonderful sister, who got me obsessed with Jungle Cruise, she now transcribes my interviews for me. So that's
full circle.
That's helpful.
Full circle. Yeah. That's cool.
I'm like, hey, this book is your fault anyway. So yeah.
So I got this book before you and I met or had any interaction. You were on the Hub Crawl recently, and I had your book. I didn't even realize that it was your book. And you were like, oh, this Jungle Cruise book. And I was like, oh, is that the... And it was. But yeah. I have it in front of me, and I'm curious now. I definitely want to talk more about the book, but I'm very curious. What was the one very public embarrassment that is alluded to on the back? Or is that something people should buy the book for? It says, celebrity guests, the good, the bad, and the entitled, and one very public embarrassment, Skipper style.
I have no idea.
You're like, I have to read my own book again.
No, that was written by the publisher, that back. I'm very public embarrassment.
Skipper style.
There is so much. I have no, it definitely wasn't me. I don't really get embarrassed.
At a height that led to one skipper's permanent expulsion from Disneyland. Ooh.
Yeah. That's my buddy, Trevor Kelly, who I do my podcast with, The Jungle. It was the prank. I think it's the best prank in the history of Jungle Cruise, easily. So maybe one of the best pranks in Disneyland. But his prank, which he filmed because the man's a genius, was has become Disney legend, where some people didn't believe it had actually happened. And I'm like, no, we were there. It's been filmed. It actually happened. So that's the heist.
I was going to say, I think a different skipper may have told us about this. Did this happen to happen with a space that is now where Rosita resides? Yeah. we won't give it away.
Yep. The old Aladdin's Oasis. Yep,
Aladdin's Oasis.
Yeah.
The embarrassing thing. I don't know what that, huh? We do so many.
They thought something was embarrassing. Yeah, but he's Fred like, Martin. Nope. Oh, yep. There's Freddy.
Yep. I got to go change the back of that, book. So,
right.
Let the department write it.
So I started reading it. Actually, it was kind of funny. Usually I get Disneyland books and I'll like quickly glance to find the photos and just kind of look, because it's something, you know, Christmas Day, you open stuff, you're just quickly trying to look at it and be excited. I actually sat there while everybody else, because we rotate, everybody opens one present and goes around. While everybody was looking, I started reading the first chapter and I was like, this is awesome, because it's just a bunch of little stories. Like, it's just like you have them categorized by like a topic, but then each thing is just kind of like a story from a different skipper that you interviewed. Yeah. And I thought that was really cool, because you can literally pick this up and read as little or as much as you want and not feel like, well, I've got to get to the end of the chapter, or I've got to, you know, like, it's easy to pick up and read just like a couple quick things if you have just a couple minutes or longer.
That's really cool.
Thank you very much.
Like, there's a lot of the names of the skippers and then also the years where they were in the jungle.
That's 1960s. Look here.
Yep. Wow. I interviewed a guy that was there opening day, 1955, and I interviewed skippers that were still working there when the books were published, students of mine from Cal State Fullerton. So I literally got every era, every generation.
That's wild.
On the wall of my house, I had a giant, like, 6-page timeline of Disneyland. And then I would draw lines of which skippers and what years they were there, so I could cover every era of the history of the park.
That's wild. So how did you get to connect? Was there like a secret skipper network? Is that how you got to connect and find all these people? Or how did you find the skipper from 1955?
We are part of the Illuminati. So it's a skipper, and it's very secret. It started, because with just my friends, and then it started through a thing called the Skipper Show, which was a stand-up show we used to do.
Oh, fun.
A theater in Fullerton, and then we moved it to the Improv in Brea. And it was only Jungle Cruise skippers were allowed to perform, like current or former skippers. And they could do Disney material or no Disney material. It was just seeing a skipper. And so I met a bunch of skippers doing that. But the way I did it is there's a Facebook group for skippers. Mm-hmm. And literally what we do, I met a guy who'd been there. A woman, one of the first women to work there in the 90s. And she's like, oh, you got to talk to this guy and this guy and this guy. And then I would talk, hey, you know, Sue said I could talk to you. Like, okay, I'll interview them. Oh, you know, you got to talk to. And then it slowly just kept working backwards in time. And then I met at that Disney history thing. I met Disney legend Claude Coates.
Oh,
mm-hmm. Was a Jungle Cruise skipper for years.
Oh. And
interview him. And he was there like before and after they put in the Indian elephants. So he knew what it was like before and after. And so he knew some people. And so it's like, it just kind of branched out from there.
Wow.
We're a cult and we all still hang out. Like I looked at my phone. Most of the contacts in my phone are people I met when I worked at Disneyland.
That's cool though.
It's like we bonded forever.
Yeah.
And it's neat. I interviewed skippers from the 60s before I was born and we had some of the exact same experiences. And it was like, it was so weird to be hanging out with this guy that was, you know, in his late 70s. And I did that too at the same spot. And it was really neat. It's like a brotherhood and a sisterhood of skippers. So, but
that's cool.
And once I put the word out, I started getting more messages. That's how I met Skipper Freddie.
Oh,
I think
sure.
Contacted me and said, oh, I worked here these 2 years. And so, and then he hooked me up with some other people. Yeah.
We learned when Freddie was on that you're never a former skipper. Once a skipper, always a skipper. So we did learn that because we were calling everybody else former cast members, but not skippers now.
Yep.
So, okay. I got a couple questions that I remember that I wanted to ask about the Jungle Cruise, but I highly recommend that people check out your books because like I said, they're easy reads. You can pick it up and put it down.
The Jungle Cruise?
Yeah. And just, you know, if you've enjoyed this interview at all, you're going to love the books for sure. So my couple questions are, one, a little behind the scenes, I guess.
Okay.
Most attractions have work lights. Are there work lights in the jungle?
They're not work lights, no. But they would, like, the maintenance and gardeners at night would use the boats. They would drive out in the boats and turn the boat on. Yeah. Or sometimes I would see them with, like, work lights that they would set up on the on the land. But there are no big, only lights they had. And again, it might have changed because I haven't worked there in years.
Yeah.
But like scene lights, like mood lighting. But there was no. Like, so it was.
Yeah.
So the lights, when you go through the jungle and the lights you see that are on, like in the different scenes, that's the only real light that's out there.
Sure. So. Yeah. I was just curious because I it just dawned on me as we were talking. I literally had never thought about it before.
Well, and clearly the animals out in the jungle need some TLC, so they need people to come care for them.
Right.
I did think it was wild. I'm sure you saw the photos. I think it was either this year or late last year where they were placing one of the elephants back.
Yeah. Yeah. They lift them out with helicopters every couple of years when they need to get repaired. Yeah.
I don't know what I'd do if I just happen to look out my window and see.
But how else are you going to get
an elephant fly?
Weird is I don't know how expensive that helicopter is. It's got to be expensive, but it flies over. They do all the hooks. They lift it up. They only move it about like 100 yards and then set it down and then fly away. Like they just set it in the back of the where Imagineering has a little shop so they can work on it. So it's not like they put it somewhere far away.
Yeah.
They don't fly it up to Glendale.
So, okay. So if you're going to spot this, you got to be real quick to be able to spot it.
They spend all that time and money to move it maybe 100 yards. And then that's,
as part of the book in chapter 16, I didn't know this till I was just glancing at it. When the Jungle Cruise was new, smudge pots and giant fans were installed to keep the delicate tropical plants warm during the winter nights. By the early 70s, the jungle had grown to the point where these were rarely used, but they were still there.
Yeah.
That's super neat.
And those were used in farms out here in California, and Orange County still had a lot of farms, and we don't get Wisconsin cold, not even close, because literally all die if it went below 60 at any point.
Yep.
But it'll get cold enough where sometimes you get a freeze. And they were worried that a lot of these plants had never been grown in the United States before. So they weren't sure they were going to survive. So smudge pots basically have a bunch of oil in them and they're just little fires that go out. But there were two towers. And I was told up until the 90s, early 90s, one of the towers was still there. Like they took the motor off, but it had these big fans that would just blow air through the jungle so that nothing would freeze. It would just keep the air circulating. So, but they did that for, I think the fans ran for the first maybe 20 years or so. They would do just to keep the plants warm enough so they wouldn't freeze on really cold nights.
Yeah.
But now, now it's its own actual literal microclimate.
Yeah.
Which is incredible.
Yes.
Like, really, when you think about it, that's really amazing.
Some mornings, if you were the first or second boat of the day, you would drive through the Cambodian shrine into the Indian elephant pool, and there was just fog in the air. And there was no fog anywhere else, just in the jungle, because no one had gone through there. So it was just this weird, misty, tropical environment. And because you were doing a check before the park opened, you have to go through an animation check. And you're like, no one else alive is going to see this. It's just me or me and my friends on the boat seeing this tropical thing. It was very cool.
Wow. Yeah, I would think that would be cool.
Yeah.
From all the people you talk to, is there any reason that you're aware of that they don't do the Jingle Cruise anymore?
Oh, I know. I know about that. Yeah. A buddy of mine is the guy that helped create the Jingle Cruise. The first year that they did it in California, it was run by Imagineering. Imagineering still runs the one in Florida, which is why it still goes on. After that first year, it got taken over at Disneyland by a different department, the park decoration department. I don't know what its real name is. But they took it over and then they made it so much bigger and grandiose. And the problem was during that time of the year, Small World is down for Christmas decorations. Haunted Mansion was down for Christmas decorations. And so they couldn't have another big ride closed to do Christmas decorations. And when WDI does it, like the one in Florida, they can do it like in a day or two. It's set up and it's very quick, where the park decoration people needed days and days on either side, like a week, almost, it got to be almost a week on either end.
Sure.
It had to be shut down. And Disney's like, that's just too long. But it was weird. You don't hear about like interdepartment spats. And some reason, some executive was convinced that letting the Disney decorations department run it was better than having WDI run it. And so it kind of crashed and burned.
Dang.
That's so sad.
It still is in Florida. And if you go to Florida during Jingle Cruise and you hear the radio, there's like a radio with different people speaking. Mm-hmm. Every single one of those people speaking is a former Jungle Cruise skipper.
Oh, that's cool.
They recorded that. The skipper who was behind this, the Imagineer named Kevin, they were recording it. He's like, hey, let's get some skippers. And there's a lot of skippers that work in Imagineering. So he ran through the building. Hey, come here, come here. And he would call up, say these things. So it's like, I think six or seven different former skippers that are now Imagineers doing voices. Yeah. So I think that's very cool. Yeah.
That is cool. Mm-hmm.
That's very cool.
I have another question, but do you have another question?
No, you're good.
Teresa's like, I'm a question machine. I'll just ask all types of questions. This is another you may not know, but I'm curious. I had not remembered, at least, that sometimes that the Jungle Cruise queue could be used for Indiana Jones, like an overflow. Mm-hmm. Has that always been that way?
Yes, yeah, it was designed that way. Yeah. So when they built the boathouse, knowing Indiana Jones was being built at the same time, and they built the boathouse, the Jungle Cruise actually lost like 20 feet of jungle. So if you look at earlier pictures at the dock, the jungle was a good distance away from you, where now the jungle is really close because they to make Adventureland wider because it's still so narrow. Mm-hmm. So yeah, that was the original design. I've only seen it used for that once or twice, where they would bring people up the stairs and then up the upstairs queue, then back down.
Yeah.
I do know there was a skipper and his friends who messed with the queue ropes so that you would enter the Jungle Cruise, you would go up the stairs, and then it would just dump you out onto the exit of Indiana Jones.
Oh, no.
One guy just hooked it up and then got on his boat and goes, and he watched these guests just walking down the steps, looking around, like wondering where they were. He goes, I felt kind of guilty, but yeah, I didn't.
I wonder how long it took someone else to realize, oh, wait a minute. Why is nobody coming to ride the Jungle Cruise?
But I'll tell you, that building is brilliant because it's so versatile that the Jungle Cruise queue can be, I mean, what, you know, if there's not that many people, it's just the bottom, then you can go up the stairs, and then there's just like, there's the little section you can just kind of go out and back. There's all the different rooms you can go around. There's the extended area. It's just crazy.
And the where the Fast Pass used to be, that's now just like, it's like a wasted kind of a stroller area, kind of not. That was an original part of the queue.
You'd
walk into the jungle and you would turn right and go through and wiggle through that room and then go to the second room. That was an original room. And the floor was slanted because if you look where the jungle is, it looks like the building's kind of collapsing. So the floor slants to kind of play with that story. But when they put Fast Pass in, they had to level it out. It lost that effect. But so that was an original part of the ride. Yeah. I got to interview the guy that helped design that building too. And he was a really neat guy, had some good stories to tell about its construction and whatnot. Yeah.
Well, there's a ton of like little Easter eggs and stuff in all of that.
I'm really sad now that they leveled it out so it doesn't look like it's falling over now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. In the ticket office, you know, that where the ticket office is, you can come. There was a little like ledger, and when you got trained, you would open it up and sign your name and the day you got trained.
Oh, that's cool.
And so it was all of these skippers. And when my first book came out, a lead said he would take a copy of it, and if I aged it, he would stick it on a shelf in there. And he got transferred somewhere else before I could get that done.
Dang.
But that's all right.
That would have been cool.
That would have been really cool.
Because evidently I was the first skipper to publish a book, so they were excited.
Oh, there you go. There you go.
Skipper stories one day.
Yeah.
Disney would love that.
Yeah. Well, Disney should love stuff like that because it really just shows, like, you know, when people, you know, like our listeners who are going to hear this interview and people hopefully that'll go buy your book, like, they're so, I don't know. I feel like it adds to the attraction.
Yes.
It doesn't take the magic away. It just adds like a different layer of magic on there and history that's just so interesting. People think, you know, oh, you know, people who aren't huge Disney people, right? They just think, oh, it's just a theme park. Like, who cares? Like, what is there? But there's all of these stories and history and everything that goes along with it.
Yeah. And all respect to Disney, a lot of their like the Imagineering story or the stuff they put on Disney Plus or their books focus on this Imagineer made this great ride and here it is. And then that's the end of the story.
Yeah.
Where the whole point is, okay, what about the people that work there?
Yeah. Like, what about after?
Mm-hmm. Harper Goff built that ride and Mark Davis helped design part of it. Any skipper that's worked there for 6 months knows more than either one of those two men do about how that ride operates. Mm-hmm. So they know it inside and out.
Yeah.
So, but Disney doesn't really, you know, they don't care, but they don't really care what the average cast member has to say because they're still focused on the big famous names. Mm-hmm. I'm going to do the history of the people that were there every day and knew what it was like in the different eras through the decades and why, no matter when we worked there, we all seem to just love it.
Yeah.
And continue, because we've not met a skipper that doesn't, that whose heart still isn't some, at least partway in the jungle for sure.
And I know people that didn't want to work there because they thought it would ruin the magic for them or anything, but working there made me love it 1,000 times more. And it just made me appreciate it more and the amount of effort they go into. Because every morning before the parks even opened, you would get to the jungle and there would be people all over it. Gardeners would be there and like dozens of gardeners because that jungle is complex. And they're constantly moving plants around and changing them so they get enough sun. And so you'll come by and some scene is completely different. Because they were there all night working on it, or an animal's gone and it's back the next day. And so every morning you would get there as they were leaving and like a boat would come by filled with plants. And then they'd load it into a truck and then they'd wash the boat off and clean it and give it back to us. And so one night I got there, they were getting there to go to work and I had to work it's called a back to back. So I closed the ride. I was there the next morning to open it. The same guys were leaving and they had spent all day there. So it's a high maintenance attraction. And so are the skippers. We're also high maintenance. So it balances out.
You know, it's kind of cool that an attraction ride vehicle is used by the people who maintain it.
That is neat.
Yeah. It used to be a little boat called a skiff with a little outboard motor. It could hold 2 or 3 people. That was there from the 50s. And I think it got sunk too many times under Schweitzer Falls or just in print. Because it was there in the mid-90s. And when I came back in the early 2000s, they were like, no, we got rid of it. Because there was too much trouble with it. Like, but if a boat broke down, a lead could hop on that skiff and get to the boat really quick. Mm-hmm. Now you wait for the boats to cycle and get on a boat and either back up or go forward. Mm. Takes longer. I'm not really sure why Disney got rid of it, but it was a fun little thing to cruise around in just a little outboard motor. Yeah.
And not to embarrass you, but how many times did you jump the track?
Never once.
Look at that.
Not one time. Everybody told me what it's like. It was like feeling an earthquake. They're like, we can't tell you what it's like, but you'll know it when you feel it.
Oh.
Feel it in your feet and you know. And so I was always ready for it. And I had friends that hopped the track when like plants got stuck, you know, under the gate.
Oh, sure. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes if there's certain curves, if you took them too fast, mm-hmm. pop you off. Never did it. That was one of the few claims to fame I have. Never derailed my boat ever.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. So
I think that's something to be proud of.
I would have thought that would have been kind of like something everybody did, almost like a rite of passage. Like that's just part of training. It's going to happen.
Yep. And I had a friend that derailed in boat storage, which is difficult to do. She was trying to get out of boat storage, pulling it on, derailed it, was able to get it back on the guide before the managers came over to see what was wrong.
Well, that's pretty good. I guess if you're going to pop it off, it's nice to get it back in too.
Yeah. And I'd helped boats when they would derail from time to time. But no, I never did. I always thought it might happen at some point, but mm-hmm. I took those safety corners very slowly like I was supposed to. I was a good trainer. I think because I'd spent 6 years as a school bus driver before that, driving safe and following the rules, because that was a safety thing for me. And so I wouldn't screw around on the boat. Plus, that boat couldn't go that fast anyway. But
there you go.
I do want to share one of my favorite jokes that I'm sure you've heard on the Jungle Cruise before.
Another one.
Yes. They don't do it anymore. But there's that section of the track that kind of bends to the side by where the skulls used to be. And I remember the skipper going, we're going to make an unnecessary turn and another unnecessary turn, because it would just kind of go, you know, just kind of doot, doot.
Yeah, I love that. There was another one when they took away the guns. There were skippers, because the boat would do a little jog. Like, all right, I'm looking for the different hippos. There should be a little baby hippo here. Oh, found it. And like the boat would kind of jiggle. Oh, that's so funny. Yeah.
Have not heard that. Definitely heard the unnecessary turns.
You know what's going to happen? We're going to be on Jungle Cruise next time. We're going to hit a thing and it'll be like, baby hippo.
Yeah, baby hippo. Leaving it, because it is, it's part of that. It's called the S curve as you're leaving. That was that trick, what he was doing. But the first part of it, oh, there's the one baby hippo. Yeah.
Is there a reason for that to be twisted like that?
No, just
for fun.
Just to give it some funsies. Yeah. Just to kind of, yeah. Yeah. It's the canoe. I sat in the canoe once. Me and another skipper sat there, which was more difficult to get in than we thought. Because it's right on the water, but it has like these, it was difficult to get in. And we took a big rope and we wrapped it around ourselves like we were trapped on the canoe. The headhunters were going to come get us. And this boat pulls around. And it was, God bless this guy. This skipper was the least funny person ever. He pulls up, stopped the boat. We're like, help us, help us. And he goes, hey guys, well, what are you doing? We're like, help us. We're being kidnapped. They're going to eat us. He's like, what are you doing? I just looked at him and said, move it up, Skip, which is what you would tell a skip to go away.
Yeah.
Like, move it up. Okay. And he just drove away. And I'm like, we did not. My buddy's like, I got to get back to the dock. I'm like, we did not go through all this hassle just so he ruined our joke.
Right.
Yeah.
That's hilarious.
That I'm impressed. I'm thinking about where that was before and how you'd have to hop in there and not.
Easy. Then we got there. I'm like, oh, crap. This is not. Yeah, but the next skipper, she came by and she killed it. She's like, stay there. I'll get you help. You know, I won't leave you no matter what. And then she just drove away. You know? Like, yes, that's how you do it. She's
like, okay, now we can go.
Yeah.
Too funny.
This makes me want to ride the Jungle Cruise like 100 times right now. Right now.
Right now. We'll get the teleporter out.
I mean, you want us to have a teleporter if it was only a real thing.
David, is there anything else that you'd like to share about your experiences or the Jungle Cruise or the books before we wrap it up?
Yeah, let's talk about my books. If you want. Daddy's got bills to pay. My books are available on Amazon, or you can buy them at my Etsy store while I will autograph them for you.
Ooh.
At absolute charge. And it's doctors. Just go to Etsy, type in Dr. Skipper, and you'll find my books there, and I'll autograph them for you. So there's Skipper stories, more Skipper stories. And then probably this early fall, the second edition of The Jungle Cruise, The Wild History of Walt's Favorite Ride is going to come out. My buddy, Trevor Kelly, who I do my podcast with, The Jungle, he did all three of my book covers.
Oh, very cool.
Designer. So he made my logo for me. He did all my book covers. He's just stunningly talented. Yeah. So, yeah, I picked those. I was at a used bookstore and I found a copy of my book there, which I thought was cool. And I looked at it and it was $25 and it only sells for $20. And I'm like, so I asked the guy, why is this more? He goes, that's been signed by the author.
Did you say, yeah, I know him.
that's me. Yeah.
Is there a photo in there? Because that would have been hilarious if you just like sat there.
Should be in the very back. Yeah.
Did you show him or did you just leave it go? Be like, okay.
No, I told him, that's really me. Can I see? I think it's the photo of me. Oh, yep. That's me actually in the Jungle Cruise Tower.
Ooh.
On the second floor, there's a little office in there, and that's me sitting in there.
I like how it's themed.
Trying to look smart. Yeah.
Very fun.
Yeah.
Well, we will, of course, have a link in our show notes for those interested in checking out the book. Is there any place, do you do social media at all? So if anyone wants to follow you, where should they follow you?
Follow me on Instagram at Dr. Skipper Marley. Dr. Skipper Marley. Yeah, my Instagram stuff is there. I have a TikTok that I do virtually nothing with. Just whenever I remember, like, oh, crap, I got a TikTok. I do a lot of talks around the country. The first weekend in April, I'll be in Orlando at the Tiki Agogo.
Ooh.
Where I'll be doing the talks. And then at the end of April, I'll be at Tiki Oasis, Arizona in Scottsdale. So I get around and I do talks at different events. And it's always a lot of fun to get out there and yeah, it's a blast to meet people and tell these wild stories and meet new skippers and add their stories to what's going on. Yeah, that's my favorite thing to do.
Super cool.
I can't believe that there are skippers out there that you have not met yet.
I met a bunch. Can I tell you one quick story?
Yeah,
of course.
The guy in the first book named Keith Hart. I'd never met him. Other people said, oh, you got to talk to this guy, Keith Hart. So I'm like, okay. So I interview him. He lives in Portland, Oregon. And we're just talking over the phone. Great interview, good stories. And the guy's an Elvis impersonator as well. And so 2 years later or so, we're sitting, my wife and I are on a vacation in Portland, and we're sitting in Hala Pele Tiki Bar, right? And I'm social, so I'm just chatting with the guy next to me. And at one point, my wife goes, I like being here because nobody knows who you are. Because this is because I'm always like social and talking to people. And so I'm like, yeah, okay. I guess that's okay. So I'm talking to this guy next to me. He's like, hey, see that guy at the other end of the bar? I'm like, yeah. He goes, he's an Elvis impersonator. And I just look at him and go, hey, Keith. And his head snaps around and looks at me. And I'm like, give mine. And he went, oh my God. And he comes up and my wife just sighs and goes, of course.
That's awesome.
I've hung out with him a bunch of times now. Just couldn't be a nicer guy. So yeah, it's neat to meet people that I've only talked to on phone or by Zoom in real life.
Yeah, it is fun.
Story of meeting a skipper I'd never met before, but we'd talked a lot.
That's amazing.
Well, we've come to our last question.
All right.
If you could work at Disneyland again, what would you do? Sky's the limit. This could be any job, even one that you make up.
Okay. I saw this question. I'm very excited by this one. Anything I could do, I would become the president of Disneyland. And the first thing I would do, I'm not trying to be political, is I would give all of the cast members a living wage.
Because
that company makes billions. And in the 1970s, the average Disneyland employee had been there for 11 years and was making the equivalent of $27 an hour.
Wow.
Now the modern cast member has been there about 6 months. Mm-hmm. And like what? Just a couple bucks above California's minimum wage. So they have money to pay these cast members.
Yes.
So, I mean, Iger needs, you know, a few dozen more $1 million, but I would distribute it to the people that actually make the magic and do that work. That's what I would do. Then the next day they would go right back and rescind all my ideas. But
yeah. They're like, wait a minute, we're getting rid of this guy.
Well, it didn't say that it was one day. It just said, if you could work there and do whatever, like, there you go.
Yep.
that's what I would do. I would bring back a lot of the fun free things that used to be at Disneyland that didn't cost the company much.
Yeah.
Guests love. I would do that kind of stuff. Just make it more. I'd be bad because I wouldn't be the world's best capitalist. I go, we're making a lot of money. It's okay to spend some of that money, mm-hmm. not just stockholders or whatever. Let's reinvest. Because that's why some businesses hated working with Walt and Roy. I don't remember his name, but there was some big businessman in LA who said, I will never do business with the Disneys again. They take all their profits and dump it right back in that stupid park. And he was there.
Where it is now.
And that's what Walt and Roy did. They always made it better and interesting. Yeah. I would try to spend my energy doing that and make,
I love I would
make a place again where cast members want to work there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah, I feel like, I you know, Disney with their Disneyland Forward thing even showed a little chart of this, that every time they invest in the park, attendance and profits go up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
So like if they so invest,
only, it's only benefiting themselves.
Yeah. If they invest $1 billion in the park, they make like $3 billion back. So it's like, you know, it's like, isn't it like business 101? Like it, like you have to spend money to make money. Like, I feel like they just forget this.
Yeah, well, because they're more focused on giving bonuses to executives and using Disney lands. Because for decades, the Disney parks helped float the Disney company when it ran into trouble. Like before Marvel, before all that Star Wars stuff, if Disney had a bad year in the movies, they were in trouble. So Disneyland and Disney World kept the company profitable. So it's always been a cash cow for the rest of the company. So it's always been the one place they know, oh, we can get money from the parks. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's why the attitude's gotten kind of out of control, where they don't want people working there too long, because then they get raises and they get paid too much. So they like having turnover so that they can save a few bucks. I was a lead at Jungle Cruise, and I had like 20 cast members working, because Jungle Cruise takes a lot of cast members to run. So they're working it. And a manager calls me and says, hey, send 3 people home to save budget money. I'm like, okay, I'll see who will go. And you ask like, who wants to ER, which means early release. And there's always people that want to leave early. So ER, ask everybody. I put up a sheet, who wants to ER? Nobody did. So I call him back. Nobody wants to ER. He goes, pick 3 people, send them home.
And
no. And at this point, I was teaching at Cal State Fullerton. So I felt like I could say whatever the hell I wanted. Fire me from this job. What do I care? So I'm like, no. He goes, why not? I said, you schedule these people these hours. Mm-hmm. They expect these hours. I'm going to allow them to work the hours that you personally scheduled them for. And he goes, well, I want them. And I totaled it up. I said, you want to save $35 for the company. You don't think they can afford $35 to let these people work an extra hour? Like,
yeah.
Like, fine. And then hung up the phone. I'm like,
you're like, you can leave early.
You can pay these people more. They're, some of those cast members work so hard.
Oh, yeah.
And don't always get well by guests.
You know, I would think that it would be a bigger benefit to have more seasoned, tenured employees that know what's going on, so they can pass the knowledge so things aren't hiccuping, you know?
Every place I've ever worked said that they want to keep people because it costs so much more to bring in a new employee than it does to retain an old one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Disney doesn't seem to feel that way. When I was there a couple of weeks ago, and I know from friends that still work there, that turnover is so high at the Jungle Cruise, a lot of the institutional memories just lost. And the line, the queue for the Jungle Cruise was outside the building. It reached all the way to the Tropical Hideaway. And when I worked there, if there were more than 8 bodies sticking out the door, we would run and extend the queues.
Yeah.
The line went all the way out. I watched 2 cast members walk out, look at it, and then just go back and sit down. Right. Yeah. And I watched a manager walk out. She saw it, ran over, and she adjusted all the ropes.
Yeah.
Shippers had no clue they were supposed to do that.
Right.
My buddy's like, yeah, the new people, they're there so briefly, and they're not trained very well. They don't know that they're supposed to go make the lines shorter and not have them stick outside. And they're just not, they're not doing that great of a job. And that's why a lot of the pranks and stuff at Jungle have disappeared, because it was institutional memory. I worked with people that had been years. And so they told me stuff, and now it's here for 6 months. I've worked here for 8, and they don't know what happened a couple years ago.
Right.
Damn. That's one of my hopes with my books, that they would read my books and say, oh, they used to create chaos at this ride. We a little bit with some skippers. They've read it and been like, hey, we should have more fun at this job. Cause it is still the best job I've ever had. The most beautiful office I've ever had was driving that boat through the Jungle Cruise. There's nothing like it.
Oh, I believe it.
Well, David, Dr. Skipper, thank you so much for coming on. I'm sure our listeners are going to love listening to your stories. I hope that they go read your books as well, because I know what I'm going to do later. I'm going to go back and try to get back to reading some of these, because it's just so interesting. Mm-hmm. Like the stories that people tell and like...
Well, and it's priceless too. People's stories are just priceless. So it's important that you are saving them and also sharing them so that others can... kind of relive the craziness that is working on the Jungle Cruise.
Thank you. Yeah, it's a blast. I've been honored to do it, you know, to get these stories recorded, and it's been a highlight of my historical career to do it. Yeah, and a lot of fun.
Looks like we're coming in for a landing, gang, but please stay listening until trivia comes to a stop, and then yous can walk to the nearest exit. Thanks for listening to the 8th Wonder of the World, DL Weekly.
Welcome back to Trivia Land, where we're going to find out the answers to tonight's questions and how you did. How do you think you did?
Not bad. Not so good. Not so good. Nope, not so good.
I don't think we did bad.
I'll be honest. Not good.
I feel better than most weeks.
I'm confident on, a 3, I guess. Never mind.
See, I feel better on most weeks.
All right, well, let's find out, shall we? Your first regular round question. To celebrate Easter, there used to be the old-fashioned Easter parade, which ran on Main Street around the holiday until 1982. What year was the first old-fashioned Easter parade? Tag said 1963. Teresa said 1958. The correct answer that I was looking for was 1956.
Whoa!
Way early.
That's the first Easter in the park.
The impressive display of turn-of-the-century vehicles traveling up and down the parade route was thanks to the participation of the Horseless Carriage Club. There was also an accent on Easter fashion, ladies dressed to the hilt, and most wore Easter bonnets with celebratory frills.
Wow.
Speaking of old-time Disneyland, total random question, but I'm curious from both of you, actually, your answer. Do you sometimes look at old stuff, like you look at Disneyland in the 50s and 60s and people like, and flying too? Like,
yeah.
And people are like dressed up and look nice. Do you ever wish that it was that way again?
Yes.
Think about
seats. Like, just think about how much, because like everything was more of an experience.
Yeah.
But then the flip side of that, it was a bigger, more of an experience because people didn't do those things multiple times. So like, you and I wouldn't be visiting California a couple times a year if we were back when like plane, you know, was just more, I don't know, luxurious or whatever you want to call it.
I just think
people
could
smoke on planes. I don't think I'd want to be.
I think it was nice that people like took pride in how they looked and like wanted to be an
That's
experience.
Why we need to go to a Dapper Day celebration.
What did you say, Vern? What was your...
No, I said all the time, but I do also take Teresa's point that You know, oftentimes, you know, it wasn't affordable. And so you see people dressed up to do stuff because the people that could afford to do things were the people that could afford to dress up.
Well, but also it was just a big deal. So,
yeah,
that as well. Yeah. You know, but I mean, your normal workaday Joe couldn't do stuff.
Yeah.
He was working.
Yeah. Fair. All right.
But yeah, no, anyway, I agree. Your second regular question. From 1962 to 1967, guests could also enjoy a display of La Coquette, the hot air balloon. What is special about this balloon? Both of you saying that it was shaped like an Easter egg. The correct answer that I was looking for is, it was the balloon from the Academy Award-winning film Around the World in 80 Days.
Oh.
And that's... all the article said.
Was it egg-shaped?
All the article said was that it was the balloon from Around the World in 80 Days.
And it was egg-shaped.
Yep. It was the 60s, and it was a cool balloon, and you could go check it out at Easter time.
Huh.
Yep. That's what I learned about that, and I wanted to share it. If anybody has more information about that, please feel free to share.
Awesome.
Your third regular round question. Called a hippity-hoppity good time, Guests can participate in the current Easter celebration at Disneyland and DCA. What's this celebration called? Teresa, knowing the answer right away before we even started asking questions, the correct answer is the Eggstravaganza.
It's so fun.
And if you live near the parks and you feel like going, that is still going on until April 9th of 2024.
Wow.
Wow.
Still got a week to get there. A little less than a week by the time this episode actually drops.
Still.
Yep.
So you can go earn one of the next
Our fourth
answers.
Regular round question. What are the potential prizes for participating in the current Easter celebration at Disneyland DCA and also at Disney World? If you happen to be a Florida listener, you can do this there as well.
Wrong podcast, people. No.
We have Welcome listeners that side. Go to Disney World as well. I work with one. Hi, Todd. The correct answer, which you knew. This year's extravaganza prizes are the same as those available at Epcot and Walt Disney World. They are the character charms on ribbons. Charm. Available charms include Thumper from Bambi, Judy Hopps from Zootopia, Chip and Dale, Mickey Mouse, and Minnie Mouse, each with their own extravaganza 2024 ribbon attached.
I do have to say that I feel like this was helpful that we literally talked about this a couple weeks ago, so...
It's nice that you report on news, and then sometimes we ask questions about news.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yep. Yep. And as I was looking at things, they look very much like finishers medals from races.
They do look like little
finishers. Anybody watching the live
medals.
Stream, you can see them right behind my head. And the bonus question tonight. While researching tonight's questions, I came across an article on CBS19news.com. Extravaganza, Easter treats, and springtime characters. The article states, and I quote, Easter Day falls on April 12, 2020 this year, and if you're visiting Disneyland during Easter, or even the week surrounding it, you can enjoy plenty of Easter-themed fun at the parks. What's wrong with this article? Both of you knowing that I was looking for, the parks ended up being closed due to COVID.
Mm-hmm. You had to bring it down.
I know, I'm sorry. It amused me that the article... was still up yeah. 4 years yeah. later. Nobody bothered to take that one down.
Nope.
So
they were too busy quarantining at home.
Yes. They had a lot else to do. But so I think you did really well. 3 out of 5. Not bad.
Not bad.
See? Yeah. I didn't think it was bad. You didn't feel very good about it.
I didn't.
Well, listeners, how do you think they did? How did you do listening at home? Do you think you've got that awesome question that could really stump them next week? Well, if you've got that perfect question and you'd like to hear it on the podcast sometime, feel free to send that in to us by clicking the tab at dlweekly.net/trivia.
Well, we will be back next week with more Disneyland news and information.
Until then, go out and enjoy the parks.
And a special thank you to our editor, Sadell.
Please remain seated until the podcast comes to a complete stop and the doors have opened. Then collect your belongings, watch your head, and step carefully from the episode. On behalf of all of our crew, thanks for traveling with us, and we hope you have a happy and memorable visit here at DL Weekly.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.